This is Reuven and Levi, we're learning together. The book Gan HaShalom, The Garden of Peace, The Guide to a Happy and Fulfilled Marriage. We're in a chapter dealing with the personal relationship between a man and a woman, between a man and his wife, and the importance of Kedushat HaBrit in the Hebrew, the holiness of that area of interpersonal relationship. We're on page 137 in the Hebrew version of the book. You should know, Rabbi says, that all of Shalom Bayit depends on this thing. Mikamasibot, for a number of reasons. Firstly, a person is not able, a husband is not able to merit to fix his midot, his good midot, without this. For example, emet, truth, emunah, belief in Hashem, anava, b'shalva, humility, simcha, b'savlanut, happiness, and his patience, b'kodame, etc. Ela yidei tikkun b'gam habrit, only through fixing this area of gam habrit, only through that he's able to fix these midot. Kol man shelo tiken zot, the whole time that he didn't yet fix this, nechazim bo midot ra'ot, the bad character traits, they stick to him, they grab hold of him, they don't let him go. Kamo ka'as, like anger, atzvut, sadness, sheker, lies, bon midot, other bad midot, the tava'im, ra'im, and bad natures. Shehem gorem yashir leres bayit, and they lead directly to destroying a home. So what are we learning here? We're learning that not only many reasons why a person needs to work on his kedusha, his holiness, to try and cancel his lust for women. Not only, as we said, that the wife will actually be disgusted from him because he's acting like an animal, and that will destroy your shalom bayit, but also, completely separately from the actual relationship between the man and the wife, the man can't work on his midot until he works on fixing his holiness, his kedusha. Because he won't merit to receive all the good midot of truth, emunah, humility, happiness, patience, unless he fixes his kedusha. And also too, he won't merit to get rid of all the bad midot, anger, sadness, lying, selfishness, unless he also gets rid of his lust for women. It's a central, fundamental core of his being, and it's from that everything else comes. So although we can for sure work on those other things, and we are working on those other things, we're working on our anger, we're working on our sadness, we're working on all the negative midot, we're also trying to work on the positive midot, to be more positive, to be more truthful, to have more humility. Truth is, we can't perfect those midot, we can't actually get to a strong level of those midot if we ignore our holiness. And when a husband does merit to come out of this lust, he will then also merit to fix all of his midot. He will acquire good character traits, and then he will merit Hashem's help to have shalom bayit. Right, that shalom bayit that we're talking about in this book is a level that a husband can reach, but few husbands ever reach. Very few. Why? Because although they're working on themselves and they're trying, they haven't worked on the main thing, which is kedusha tabrit. And without that, they can't really achieve, they can't really experience true shalom bayit. So Baruch Hashem, those of us who are working a little bit on ourselves, we experience moments, times, periods, however you want to call it, of what we would call Shalom Bayit. But the truth is, we've never really tasted true Shalom Bayit. That's yet to come. That's something that's we have a little taste of, but we haven't got it properly yet. And who knows? Maybe we'll get there, maybe we won't. Whatever work we do is very useful, and it's very important, and it's certainly very helpful. But the true goal, the true light, the true taste of Shalom Bayit is at this level that involves a husband cancelling his lust. The Sefer Malachim, in the Book of Kings, Masupa al Hanavi Elisha. The story is told over there about the Navi Elisha. Sha'isha hashunua shunamit, hiksta lo chadron paveta. That the Shunanite woman fixed for him a room in her house. She gave him the upper floor. She made a little bedroom, a little room where he could live and study in the upstairs attic of her home. It was a kindness to the Navi Elisha. Shel Yalin Shama b'chol pa'am she'over b'oto aderech, that he would stay there overnight. Every time that he was coming through that area. He didn't live there day in, day out, but whenever he was passing through, that was his room. Bota Isha, the Tairit Labala, and the same with that woman, explained to her husband, Etanavi Ka'ish Elokim Kadosh. She described the man, the Elisha, to her husband as being Ish Elokim Kadosh, a holy man of God. Kamuva, like it says there in the Navi, it says there in the Book of Kings. Utoma Elisha, Hinei Nayadati ki Ish Elokim Kadosh, Huaver Aleinu Tamid. And the woman said, now I know that this man is a holy man of Hashem, who stays with us. HaGemara Brachot, and the Gemara in Tractate Brachot asks, Minayin yadat shehu kadosh, how did she know that he was a holy man? Shnei Amorayim Rav Ushma. So the answer is given by two different Amorayim, two different holy sages from the Gemara, Rav and Shmuel. Kol echad mehem noten shuv acharet. Each one gave a different answer to how she knew he was a holy man, Elisha. Echad omer, one of them said, shelo ra'ata zvuv al shulchano. One of them says that it was never seen a fly on his table. Never seen a sign of holiness. You don't get flies on you. Right? Flies are attracted to dirt. Right, in the physical world, right? Nachon, flies are attracted to it. Right, and if you're a holy people, you don't get flies, and that shows you you're really holy. I was once in learning in Kiryat Sefer, Nimodim, and I was learning in the yeshiva there for some mornings. One time, we went to the Rav's house, Rav. It's good to send the name of the praises. Rav Ephraim Barchevsky, American chap, lives in Kiryat Sefer now. Anyway, we went to his house one evening, I think for a shir, I can't remember. I remember we were sitting around the table in his house. I know, I was with someone top. We were sitting around the table in his house, and it was night time, evening time. It was in the summer. And he opened the tris. He had a big, what do you call them, patio doors? What do you call them? Big sliding doors to his garden, and this is Modi'in, right? This is like trees and forests and whatever. Opened it fully with a light on in the room. No flies, no bugs, no nothing came in. I was sitting there. I was like, You couldn't do that, like in my house, which wasn't far away. If you open the window, you've got to have the
screens.
The screens. If you don't have a screen, you get all sorts of stuff coming in. Not when we were there for an hour. Nothing coming into his holy house. Not much. Anyway, so one of them said, I can tell this man Elisha's holy because there's no fly ever came on his table. The other one said, Rabbi Shmuel, the other one said, Shalola ta keri as sedina, that the Shulamite woman never saw any keri, any seminal discharge on his sheets. Vehine, zeshama shalora ta keri. So obviously we're going to look at the second one of those two as the thing which describes him as holy. So the Rav Shalom Aris says, Behine, Zesha Marshalo Ata Kari Al Sidino. That which we said over there in Gemara Brachot, that she never saw any Kari on his sheets. Muvan Hadava, Madua Ze Meid Al Kedushata. It's understandable why this testified to his holiness. Aval Zesha Marshe Ra'ata Zvuv. But the thing which she said, the other one said, that there was never a fly on his table, why does that necessarily testify to his holiness? Ella, rather, mikan anulek, from here we can learn, shemakom sheyesh bo kedusha, in a place of kedusha, has ruvim lo ba'im lasham. The flies don't go there. The flies don't go to a place of kedusha. Lachen, lo hayu zvuvim bebeit hamikdash. Therefore, for that reason, there were no flies in the Beit HaMikdash. Even though they were chopping up meat and sacrifices, and there was blood everywhere, there were no flies in the Beit HaMikdash. Right? Because of makom and kedusha. Afilu sheshechatu sham b'chol yom behemot l'rov. Even though over there they shechted every day lots of animals. Ayasham dam b'chalev. And there was over there blood and fats. Ba'af peresh b'zevel, and even waste matters. It was because there was no holier place than the Beit HaMikdash. We made a layu shams with it, and therefore there was no flies over there. So we know that the absence of flies is a sign of Kedusha. The Hamarsha HaKadosh, and the Holy Marsha, one of the Torah commentators, Masbir, explains as follows. Shashulchan hu b'makom mizbeach, b'makom mizbeach. That the shulchan, the table, is in place of the Mizbeach. Right? Oh, Shulchan is like the Mizbeach. If the Chazal say the person speaks words of Torah over his table, it's like the Holy Mizbeach. If he doesn't, then it's not very good. Lachen, therefore, K'moshe b'veit HaMikdash, lo lin redzov, afilu b'veit HaMivtachim. Therefore, just like in the Beit HaMikdash, there was no flies seen, even in the slaughterhouse. Kashulchano shel Elisha Hanavi, so too the table of Elisha Hanavi. Shehu kedugmat hamizbeach, which was like the mizbeach, because he was so holy. Lo nireh alav zvuv, she didn't find any flies on it. Vomer ol tamarsha, and also the marsha says, shazvuv hu sheret tameh. The azvuv, a fly, is a sheretz tameh. Interesting. I don't know if he means it literally. A tameh sheretz. So we're really trying to work out in Gemara Chagiga what were the sheretzim. And we said there's a lizard. People accept the lizard was one of the eight different types of sheretz. That when it's dead, it causes tumah.
Second level tumah.
Just below.
Which is a dead body.
Right. But we don't know what the other sheretzim are. Sheretz just means creepy crawly anger, a crawling animal. Right? We don't know what it means. So here, the Marasha says a fly is a sheretz tamen. He says a fly is one of those. Right? Can you imagine? A dead fly?
No.
Yeah. It's only the dead flies. A live fly is not. But Tob, it's also, I guess, it's a sheretz tamei, so it's not good that even the live, he said they didn't, there wasn't any flies at all on the table, but live ones, they didn't land there. Because it's tummy. Nimsat, turns out, the sage that said the reason why she knew that he was holy was because she never saw any flies on his table. And the other one, who said that he never saw any keri on his sheets. They said the same thing. Because one depends on the other. Right? One, they're both expressions of holiness. Therefore, the argument between Rav and Shmuel, he rak b'mash b'mar ra'ata isha, that only what the woman saw, shemimenu sikat shelisha hu ish elokim kadosh, that she concluded from it that Elisha was a holy man of God. Shehaechad omer shekach ra'ata, v'sheni omer shekach ra'ata. One said she saw this, and another said no, she saw that. Aval hamakuvan hu ba'otonya, but they intended the same thing. Sheshnehem kivnu lekedushat habrit shezo ikar kedusha. Both of them were referring to kedushat habrit, which is the main aspect of kedusha. Al pizeh nuchal lavin. Therefore, we can understand the following: en mashe ketuv b'sefer midot, that which is written in Sefer Midot, one of the books of Rabbah. Havat isha lebaala nikar bezvuvim v'yutushim shebabayit. The love of a woman by her husband is recognizable by the fact that there are flies and mosquitoes in the house. Ki ayidei havata, because through their love, yocholim leida koach hayitzahara in kavan nechalosh imlo. They're able to know the power, the strength of the yitzahara, whether it's been weakened or not. What's he mean? Ki lefi hazmuvim miyutushim, because according to the flies and mosquitoes, shebabayit, they're in the house. Yodim im habaal hu kadosh or not. You can know if the husband is holy or not. Umimele yodim im ishto or hevet oto or not. And you can also know, therefore, if the wife loves him or not. Share lamanu sheisha or hevet rak baal kadosh, because we've learned that a wife only loves a husband who is holy. Vehim hu baal tava, and if he is a husband who is full of lusts, he lost a belototo, she cannot stand him. And therefore, according to their love, you're able to know whether the strength of the Yetzirah has been weakened. Because certainly, only when the lust has been weakened, shelabal ein tavaniyov, meaning that the husband doesn't have lust for women anymore. Rak az titachen ava, only then can love appear. Ki rak az yesh beinehem ava sheinat tului b'davar, because only then there is a love which doesn't depend on something. Like we said, the two types of love: one that depends on something, one that doesn't depend on something. One that depends on something is not real love, it's lust. It depends on physical intimacy, it depends on satisfying the lust. It's not real love. There's love which doesn't depend on anything. That's unconditional love. It's regardless of whether or not the man is satisfied by his wife and has lust, it's not dependent on that at all. So that's called a love that's not dependent on something. So only when the man gets rid of his lust can he have the second form of love, which is the proper form, which is unconditional love that's not dependent on anything. And then, in that case, when you find the second type of love, then the main connection between them, between the man and the wife, is a connection of sicha, conversation. Which is the love between two people and not a connection of lust. Right? When the love between two people is expressed in a sikha, expressed in their conversation, expressed in their sikha. Because it's not dependent on anything. It's not dependent on hugging, it's not dependent on kissing, it's not dependent on giving me food, it's not dependent on other actions. It's dependent on the interaction. Just the pure, the sikha, the conversation, the words, the exchange, the connection. That's the real love, which is why it says that the love between David and Yonatan is the example of real love. And what's an example? That's the example of love that doesn't depend on something. And what's the example of love that depends on something? Amnon and Tamar. וכך יובל, יובן, מדוע כלל רבנו את שני הסעיפים הלוך יחד? Therefore we can understand now why רבנו brought these two ideas together in this one section of Sefer Midot. ומהו הקשר בין שני חלקי הסעיף? And the connection between the two halves of this section. היינו, מה שאהבת אישה לבעלה זה ניכר בזבובים. Meaning that which we said, that our love of a husband is recognizable by the flies. And that which, according to their love, one is able to know whether or not the eighth hara has been weakened. Because the flies, they show the pagama brit, how much the husband is not holy. And they also therefore prove whether or not the wife loves the husband or not. And then you can also know that love between them is dependent on whether or not the Yetzer Hara has been weakened, which means that his ta'ava has been, he's weakened, he's taken away his ta'ava. So there we have an explanation of a bit of Navi, a bit of practicality. Anyone who finds that there are flies and mosquitoes in the home, it should be a hint for him. He needs to work, go back out to the field, do another half an hour on asking Hashem to notify no flies. It doesn't mean I'm perfect, but it means that Hashem's not needing to send me any
net around the windows.
Doesn't it? Yeah, if a person wants to test itself, he has to take the net off the window and then open the window. Right? There's no point testing yourself with the window without all the nets and say, look, I'm holding with the fly zapper in the corner.
What's real test is when the window's open. Not in your room, but it's like, you know, the other side of the building.
And you still have flies in your room.
And you still have a mosquito in your room.
Yeah. So mosquitoes also, maybe, they indicate Lashon Hara. Because of the I've heard that from somewhere before. That you get mosquitoes or flies buzzing in your ear. Because it's a remez to Lashon Hara. It's all very different things that can be expressed through that. Yofi, work today. Shalom rachok. V'zeh ma shemuva b'midrash. This is what's brought in the midrash. Al pasuk, b'ritzot Hashem darkei ish, gam o'avav yashemim. When a person follows the ways of Hashem, even his enemies make peace with him. From Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan says, Oyvav Zeishto. When it's that passage of Mishlei that says, even your enemies make peace with you, Rabbi Yochanan says, what's the Oyvav? That's his wife. Who's the enemy that's referred to in that pasuk? His wife. Rabbi Yosef ben Levi on there, Rabbi Yosef ben Levi says, no, he says, Ze Yetzahara. He's talking about the Yetzahara. Either way, if you follow Hashem's way, either your wife makes peace with you or the Yetzer Hara makes peace with you. Amar Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia says, Gam oivav yashlim imo, also his enemies make peace with him. The rabot mazikim, zvuvim v'yutushim. This includes Vansikim, Zvuvim, Vyutushim. Things that cause him harm, like flies and mosquitoes. Amidrashu Kolela Komashlamanuaka. So this midrash includes everything we've learned up till now. Shekasher Kashbar Khuzel Adam. When a Hashem helps a person, as a Yhuzelon and Aseah et a Yetzahara Shahaniyo, Hashem helps him, helps the person to free himself from the Yetzahara of Niyuf. Va'az Yeshlo Shalom Amiti Imishto. And then he had true peace with his wife. We see that there's no mazikim like flies or mosquitoes in his house.
But only in the house. Mosquitoes
and flies. Or it could be in the synagogue or in the garden. Don't know.
It's
a good question.
Saying,
you think?
I don't know. It just says in the house.
It says in the house here. Maybe that's because that's the... context we're talking about. Teidah Teif, you should know well. She'ef Shalah Sot Shalom Im Hayet Sahara Rak Im Machniim Oto. You cannot make peace with the Yet Sahara. You can only subdue him. There's no peace with the Yet Sahara. None of this peace now nonsense. None of this let's be friends, let's compromise. I'll give you Tuesdays and Thursdays, and you leave me alone for Mondays and Wednesdays. Right, you can't make peace, you can't make compromise agreements with the Eight Tower. The only way to make peace with the Eight Tower, you have to kill him, you have to defeat him, you have to subdue him. There's no making peace. I'm okay with it if you're okay with it. No. So, that's not what peace means. The Eight Tower wants to kill you, he's not going to leave you alone. The Eight Tower doesn't say, you know what? Let's stay at this level, and we'll talk, as long as it doesn't get any worse than this, I can live with it. No, everyone has the Yitzhar. Who? Everyone has the Yitzhar, just the worst Yitzhar, it's just a different one.
Yeah, of course.
Even when we were, it was a different one. It's smaller. I can't talk about you, Ruben, but when I was not close to Hashem, and there were times in the past, right? Still had a Yetzirah. I was still fighting it to try and do what I thought was good and right then. Still a Yetzirah. It was different challenges than I had now.
Let's say a guy who could watch 10 hours every day TV and things. So the Yetzirah, you have to do nothing. He is in his head again.
No, lots to do. The Yetzirah wants to take him to the 49th level. Wants to take him to the 50th. Wants to kill him. Yetzirah is not satisfied just because you're watching TV all day and you're not in the Beit HaMidrash, I'm going to leave you alone. No. Yetzirah is now making him do all other stuff. Yeah, he's not finished.
At the same time, Hashem obviously said, well, if Yetzirah is not satisfied, he's sure that Hashem much more is not satisfied with allowing someone to go there, that he wants to help us. Hashem wants to give us free choice. Hashem's desire would surely be much bigger than Yetzirah's desire to kill us. Hashem would have your desire to heal us.
He does, but the Yetzirah is from Hashem too. Hashem sent the Yetzirah. Hashem created the Yetzirah.
Right.
And said, I'm going to give you the Yetzirah. He's going to try and trip you up. He's going to try and tempt you to go to places. Right? And that's Hashem doing that.
Yeah, but I'm saying Hashem's inner desire, obviously, is much.
Is that we fight it and not do it.
Not only that.
But that's what he wants. Hashem created the Yetzirah so that we fight against it. He said, I'm going to dangle this chocolate cake in your face and I don't want you to eat it.
Right.
But I can't give you that test if I don't dangle it in your face.
You're right.
I'm going to have to create a Yetzirah that puts that temptation in your face so that you decide not to do it.
Right.
But that's up to you, because otherwise, if it's not your decision,
you
then it was a waste of time.
Then we don't have to worry about things.
You can say what?
We just say it's Hashem. Like, isn't that in the book? Like, we just acknowledge that it's only Hashem and there really is no Yetzirah. Then it removes Yetzirah.
No, because if the Yetzirah is dangling in front of me a non-sneas woman, right? I can't just look at her and say, well, this is from Hashem. What am I going to do?
No, you don't look because it's from Hashem.
Ah, so that's a different stage. It's one thing to say, I know this is from Hashem, and I do know it's from Hashem.
Yeah.
Right? You and I both know that when a woman walks in front of me, it's from Hashem. But it's not enough to know that for me to find my Yetzirah and not look. I know it's from Hashem, but I'm still looking anyway. and I know it's from you, but I can't get it. There's still a fight that's even above the recognition of I know this is from Hashem. You're right, knowing it from Hashem is a good start, but it's not the entire battle. I have to go further than that. I know it's from Hashem, and now I've still got a task on my hands. I know this is a test. I know you're sending me a test right now, Hashem, and I can't take it. Right? Poverty. I've got no money. I have no money. I know this is from you, Hashem. You're sending me no money. I know you're not letting me get... But it's not like I'm happy. I'm still fighting. I'm still upset. I still can't take it. I know it's from him.
Okay, you know it now. Sorry. But your money was not religious in your home.
Yeah, but I know to battle with what I assume to be right. Right? If somebody leaves some money and I have a battle, should I take that money or not? And I don't believe in Hashem, but I don't know. Yeah, but no, I don't call it that. But I call it my own morality. Right? I see some money and I could take that money and nobody would notice. Right? No, but I'm going to leave it. But I'm not thinking about Hashem and good and evil and bad. I'm thinking, no, it's not a good thing to do. I shouldn't do it. Right? Kid of my. But I'm still fighting. Oh, I actually like to. Right? Still got whatever fight. Still there. They're still fighting. All the secular people are still fighting with their own Yetzirah. They just don't call it Yetzirah. They call it their I've been good, to be right, to be human, to be a better Dan.
They can't even classify it. They couldn't even put it in the.
They know right or wrong. They know right or wrong. They know the fact that they quite interested in the neighbor's wife, right? She's much more beautiful than my wife. I'm very interested in her, right? But why am I not making advances to her? Because it's not the right thing to do. I shouldn't do that. So they have concept of what's good and bad. They don't call it inside of Judaism.
It says that without the context of Torah, that people would be chasing this. This is very early in the book, so. I have to look it up, but I'm almost positive.
But
they don't have the context of Torah.
So what do you want to explain? So how do you want to explain that the man who has no Torah, and he sees his neighbor's wife, and he decides, you know what? I'm not going to do anything. I'm gonna stop myself. Why is he doing that?
Why is he doing it?
Yeah.
Not qualified to answer that
question. Okay. So something we think of.
There could be a number of reasons.
But that's the truth.
There could be a number of reasons why he doesn't do it. There could be reasons why he would.
So we don't know, but we need to think of that because we have to see the world and understand how the world works. One of the answers is that actually he would do that, but he practically speaking he realizes he can't get away with it. One of the answers. No. You don't think that's possible? If someone knew 100%. That they could get away with doing what they wanted to do, they would do it?
No, because it's wrong.
Okay.
That stumbled me in the book, and I thought, it's easier.
Okay, can do not physics or anything, but I can do.
Okay, he's looking, why is he looking? He knows he can get away with it.
One more thing, sorry. In the Prophet's Chaim book on speech, it does say that everyone's part of the beauty of each unique Jew is that everyone's mind works differently, and so really something for me where I may think, well, no, I know that's doing right or wrong, maybe something else.
Maybe
it's not. It's just different.
Okay.
Maybe it's someone's given that internal.
Like Amon, with Tamar. So the neighbor sees the neighboring, so he took once and then he lost desire.
Right.
So when you only look in the world,
So here we see Amnon was a very holy Jew, right? He was King David's son. He wasn't a chiloni goy, so to speak. And he managed to find a way that he could be with Tamar, and he found a way, and he did, because he could. He had the opportunity, and he had the means. I'm not saying that's everyone,
but
I'm saying it's a possibility.
David had a few or something, maybe.
I'm saying it's a possibility that we're told these things. It's a possibility when they're not the only people, right? That by far they're not the only people. Right? It's not one-off in history that that's ever happened.
David had to make that sin justified to make up for what's...
King David, but I'm talking about him.
I know. I'm saying maybe King David had to do that, and it wasn't actually him making a sin, so that his son would help. I don't know what I mean. Maybe so his son wouldn't get in trouble. He was going with that head for his son, and it wasn't King David's fault.
His son was still in prison.
No, it wasn't
King David.
King David
had to make that sin.
No, I'm not talking about King David. I'm talking about Amnon and Tamar. When Amnon slept with his sister Tamar. When Amnon slept with his sister Tamar, he did it because he could. He found a way of doing it. He tricked her. Got her into the house alone. And that was it.
And when the evil inclination has no power to catch you, you go close to you. The closest.
Hashem stops us from sinning all the time.
No,
because we're much closer to the sin than we admit to ourselves. We try and think that we're holding at a level where I would never do that, or I would never even think of that, or even if I did think of it, I would never do it. And it's not true. It's much not true. We have no clue how powerful the Yetzer Hara is, and how much we're a slave to it. For sure, we would do it.
But
for sure, we would do it. And Hashem is helping us, stopping us. He's not giving us the opportunity.
Right, so even the person who, in their own mind, is saying in Kutzaris, but they don't know Torah, so that's what Hashem's also giving.
Stopping them from destroying himself,
right,
too.
Great.
Boch Hashem, it's very good. It's very good. He's giving everyone a chance, and he's stopping people from destroying themselves. It's not what?
It's not free will, it's Hashem and redeeming. He's breaking free will.
He's helping us all the time. Yeah, he's still giving us free will. We're still judged on everything that we're judged on everything that we said, did, or thought. We're judged on everything. Hashem is not letting us commit a lot of the things we would like to commit.
Yeah, but Rabbi Purdy said that the Yetzer Hara has to, every day, when he tests whatever he does up there, he has to report all the ways that he tried to hurt people, fool people, and that all has to be on the record. So,
that's the other half of the case.
That's great.
That's the other half of the case when you're in the heavenly court case, right? And the heavenly court is saying, what were you thinking, right? And your neshama is standing there. There has to be viewed. It has to be viewed what you were thinking, but also the Yetzer Hara has to say, well, I put this in front of his face. And then the court decides, based on what the Yetzer Hara did and what you did in response, meaning, well, I had no choice, I was blindsided, I just hit me, I had no choice, or if I did. Right, there's a difference between the woman walking past and me looking, because she walked past and I was looking, and what do you want me to do? So then, Tom, you can say, fair enough, the Yetzer Hara tricked me, put a woman in front of me, and I looked. However, if that's a different case and the Yetzer Hara put that same woman in front of me, I look, and then I follow her down the street. So now I've got no excuse. I've already taken it.
People don't do that. I'm sorry.
Oh yes, they do.
No, they don't.
No. Nehemiah, the world should be like it seems to you.
No, I'm once people.
If only the world was like you see the world, we would have a lot less problems.
Let's say you walk, you say, I'm not good. So then you listen to noise, make the noise, and you look. It's a
cashew. And everyone to whatever degree, right? Yeah. We maybe are not held to account when a woman walks past us in the street and we didn't have a chance to look away, right? So maybe we're not held, maybe we're not held to such an account for that. Maybe we are a little bit, and it depends. But each to his own level, because at some point we have to not be having our eyes where we can be taken by surprise. Our eyes should be down, and if a woman walks past me, it depends.
If you just watch your footsteps, and they're always moving, your eyes follow them, and you can't go anywhere without your footsteps, so actually you can see a little bit ahead that you don't even need to look.
Yeah, fair mod.
Not perfect at it, but it actually works.
That's fun, and that's wonderful, and that's not actually wonderful. But you're achieving that, then you're achieving it, then you're achieving a level that you should know, and you should kid yourself. You shouldn't believe that everyone on the street is doing the same thing, because really they're not. They're mamash not.
But I'm helping people not.
You're doing very good. You're helping the world in a way that you can't even imagine. But the rest of the world is in a very difficult position, and we have to be realistic. I will not pretend and say that the rest of the world are all sadiqim, because they're not.
The things they show on TV, on HBO, and even ABC, I mean, it's the worst junk ever.
I'm sure. I don't look at
that. It's great, you don't know, but it's like, between that and the computer, it basically ruins the whole.
I mean, you haven't even spoken about the porn industry.
I try not to.
Which is a, was it, $30 billion industry? There's a info chart on it. It was just really bad.
Yeah, and what it's with better or never computers then.
And we're not even talking about certain areas in major cities, whether it's the red light district of Holland or the Tenderloin in San Francisco or downtown LA downtown LA on Tiffin Spring.
We don't have to fix the world.
This is one question, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry again. But okay, with what Yaakov just said, excluding the notion of yoga language, of course it's a real thing. But if everyone in the world just knew that Hashem loved them, and we didn't know, people didn't have to know about yoga, just that pure simple thing, Hashem loves you.
Yes.
And Hashem cares, and there is Hashem, and he cares. And we put all yoga language stuff aside for a second.
Yeah.
I'm convinced that people, I would imagine, except those crazy terrorists, I'm convinced almost every single person in the world would change because they feel loved. That's the biggest thing. Like,
they would change, but it depends how much change. For sure it will have an impact. But it depends how much of an impact. Right? I still like watching HBO Sports. I still like watching movies. I still like looking at girls walking past. I know Hashem loves me, but I still enjoy looking at girls. But it doesn't necessarily change everything. It's a good start.
There's a story about someone who went off the derech, and the father was sitting shivaka for the son, and then the Baal Shem Tov told the father to love the son more.
Not fair. And it would have helped.
It seems
to be
a matter of love. Like the guy.
But it didn't fix everything. The Baal Shem Tov didn't say that for everything. He didn't spread. He wasn't it like a 60s flower power.
No, I don't mean like
said,
that.
The only thing you need is love.
No, I don't mean like that.
No, one thing you need is nachon, but one of that thing, that's right, not.
Yes.
Otherwise, we would just be teaching that. Rav Shalom Arish wouldn't bother with seven different books. He would have one book, and it would say, Hashem loves you, and that's it. But it's not enough. How much not enough?
Well, I guess excluding, sorry.
Let me ask you, do you think that the people in this kollel, the Avreichim, do you think they know Hashem loves them?
Well, okay, in asking that question, I have to be careful with what I say, because my answer could be construed in a way, if I say yes, then it's a great Rav Shalom. Yeah, it's a good thing.
No, I want to know what you think.
But if I say no,
I want to know what you think, because we have to test out this proof. Because you're suggesting that if people knew they loved
them, if I say no, then I can make an accusation, God forbid. If I say no,
we're talking about a theory of testing your proposal. It's a good proposal, but you have to test it. Because everyone can make a theory up, but they have to be tested.
But if I say no, then I
could
be accusing them of ingratitude, God forbid. But if I say yes,
I hear very nicely,
yes.
But then you can never test anything. You can never.
Do I believe that the people know I have lost them?
Yes, this is a test, just to see. It's not true. You don't know whether they do or not. You have no clue, but it's a test.
No, no. What I would say from my observation is that if people in this yeshiva, the happy with yourself CD, where we knew the value of each single mitzvah.
Yes.
And we would sing and dance, and the immense value of smiling between man and fellow man.
Let me ask you a different question. Does Rav Arush teach that Hashem loves you?
Of course.
Of course. Do the students sit in the yeshiva and listen to that from Rav Arush? Yes, they do. They've heard that many times if they've been here for a long years. They've heard that idea on more than one occasion. Hashem loves you. Nahon? You're telling me it's throughout the books, it's in all his teachings, right? It's a central core principle, Hashem loves you.
I mean,
now,
they
so you see, this is
what's happening. Nehemiah, you have to move. You have to move the goalpost all the time. You have to move the goalpost. You're moving your goalpost. Because you gave me the proposal, and I'm telling you, I explained it to you why it doesn't work. You're moving.
I don't look at it as moving the goalpost. I look at it as we're digging and we're refining.